Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for Sunday, January 13th. Right now we have Tim on the line with us. Tim, welcome.
Good evening.
Yes, well, we'll be working the show alone for a little while then. Melanie and Catherine are going to call in from the Wild Hog Supper. They're going to try to secure us some state legislators and maybe other movers and shakers down there at the Wild Hog Supper. Who knows, they might even get Michelle Obama to check in, although I wouldn't probably bet on that. It's a pretty hot property right now. Looking at the pictures on Blog for Democracy, it looks like a sea of folks are swarming around her. But that event's going on, and that, of course, marks the start of the legislative session, and we'll get into a little bit of that talk. And then in our second half hour, John Leake of the Cottonmouth Blog, the leading blog on Mississippi politics, will join us and tell us about what's going on in Mississippi. And for those of you who haven't been keeping up, Mississippi politics is probably about the hottest state in the South and probably arguably in the country. It actually has two U.S. Senate races, two open house seats. One of those is a special election. They just had a speaker's election. You know, certainly per capita, Mississippi, I'd say, has more political excitement going on now than any other state in the nation right now. But that's on tap for today, and, of course, we'll cover some other things. But, Tim, big surprise. On Tuesday night, somebody kind of shocked the world, if you will, down 10 points going in on all the polls, just hoping to keep the thing in single digits. And what do you know, Hillary Clinton won by 3%. What do you think, what do you take from that, Tim?
And in the process, fooled every pollster and pundit out there, David. Looks like we got ourselves a race on the Democratic side. It looks like women came to her late. It looks like undecideds came to her in the last 36 hours. Now, some people attribute that to the crime scene and this and that. I'm not so sure. New Hampshire has a way sometimes of undoing Iowa, and I really think that's what it was about. They chose the candidate they thought would be the better candidate in November.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of theories. One is the polling effect, that black candidates poll higher than they actually poll on election day because some white voters...
Throw that out right now because that didn't happen in Iowa.
Yes, and also I think that happens more in general elections than Democratic primaries.
Yeah.
And then I think a lot of folks may have seen, you know, this is probably going to be on the Democratic side, a history-making election. It's either going to be the first woman or the first minority to represent a major ticket in the presidential ballot. And I think people are seeing that, you know, really – if Hillary Clinton doesn't get the nomination this time, who is the next woman to step up? It may be a long time, and then that a lot of women are seeing that as a chance. Whereas if Barack Obama doesn't pull this thing out, he's still got hopefully 8 years, because, of course, I don't want to be running without an incumbent in 4 years as a good Democrat. But in 8 years, he can easily run again, and he'll have some more experience behind him. So there are scenarios where you can have both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama be president. But it has to be Hillary Clinton going first, not the other way around, given their age.
Absolutely, because of the age difference. In 8 years, Barack Obama will be 53 years old. In eight years, of course, Hillary Clinton would probably be finished in national politics.
At 53, I think John McCain would call him a whippersnapper.
Yeah, really.
So, you know, and that's certainly the truth. And that may have been part of what played into it, too. But it certainly, if nothing else, it's good for democracy to have elections when you're deciding things after, what did you say, Tim? After, when Iowa voted, it was point what percent of the electorate had voted?
Right now, let's just say right now, it is something like 1/3 of 1% is voted so far.
So about 0.3.
Yeah.
Yes, and even if New Hampshire and Iowa are a bit high because have higher turnout, it might go up to 0.5%. So still, 99.5% of the population of America has not voted, and that's just not a way to decide things that quickly. And then on the Republican side, a little bit of a comeback, although I kind of felt John McCain would win the New Hampshire primary for a while. What was your feeling, Tim, on the Republican side?
Well, so did I. For one thing, he brashly predicted that a couple of months ago. That doesn't always mean anything. But even then, Senator McCain recognized, and correctly, that if he were ever going to be president, he was going to have to win the New Hampshire primary last Tuesday, or he was going to be finished. The big loser, David, in all of this, on either side of the ball to me, has got to be Mitt Romney so far.
Yes, well, I guess his expectations were higher. Obviously, I mean, I don't see why Fred Thompson continues on. If you had to say who did better, Bill Richardson or Fred Thompson, I would say Bill Richardson every time, and Bill Richardson didn't stay in this race. So why in the world is Fred Thompson staying in this race?
But see, Fred Thompson was not banking his aspirations on winning Iowa and New Hampshire. He's banking on South Carolina. That's where his firewall is. But for Mitt Romney to spend $17 million, and his plan was to win those two states and propel himself in later states, he's down to it now, David. We got Michigan coming up Tuesday. Absolutely, Mitt Romney has to win Michigan or he is done.
Tim, that may be one of the strangest things I've ever heard you say. You just used Fred Thompson and firewall in the same sentence. Are you referring to one of those paper dressing screens soaked in kerosene? Because I don't think he has any firewall to speak of.
I'm not sure he
could win a few counties in Tennessee at this point.
He doesn't, but still, South Carolina's his plan. Mitt Romney has already blown his plan, and now he's down to it. That's why I said last week, very possible Mitt Romney could be the first major candidate to be gone. And if I were he Tuesday night and I lost, then I would face my staff, thank them, and I would exit the stage.
Yes, and actually, you know, on the Republican side, no candidate has dropped out, have they?
No major candidate.
Well,
no.
I mean, since like Tancredo dropped out before the actual for Iowa caucus was held before, you know, what's the fella from Brownback? He dropped out. I'm talking since they've started holding caucuses and primaries, no Republican has dropped out, have they?
No, and I'm going to tell you why. Look at the delegate count to date. Now, on the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton has 183, Obama has 78, Edwards 52. Now, we go over to the Republican side, Romney leads with 30. 30. Huckabee, 21. McCain, 10. Thompson, 6. Paul, 2. Giuliani dragging up the rear with 1. The point is, though, every one of them still feels like they're in the race, and rightly so.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's debatable. I mean, I would say that basically Joe Biden had a better chance to win the Democratic nomination than a few of these characters of winning the Republican nomination.
True, but when a guy who is leading in the delegate count can only claim to have won the mighty Wyoming caucuses, you know, anything's possible over there. I can really see a scenario where 4 or 5 of these guys could still win the thing.
Yes, and talking about a little bit of the Republican primary and talking about the Democratic Party from 2004, you know, we had the Dean movement, the Deaniacs and what have you, and it was a very new movement of people that didn't look political, not the usual suspects, rather young. Not that it's the same folks, obviously, because it's not, but would you say that the Dean movement, the new political infusion this time, is for Ron Paul? And I say that, I was out in town in Rome, and out in East Rome at the busiest corner in Rome where Turner McCall crosses Hicks Drive. For those of you that aren't in Rome, you probably have no idea what I'm talking about. but it is a busy intersection. They had a whole group of Ron Paul supporters, I'd say about 20 folks, all holding the signs, all younger, very bohemian looking, if you will, not the usual political crowd, certainly not the usual Republican political crowd. And I was thinking, is this the, you know, the 2004 DENIAC movement in 2008?
It could be, David. You know, earlier in September, I went up to Notre Dame to see a football game, and right in the middle of their campus that morning, I saw one active campaign out working, the Ron Paul campaign. I got a chance to talk to four guys in that campaign. All four of them were new to the process brought in by Ron Paul. That's why I think what you say may have some credence. I think a lot of his support is new support, libertarian leaning, obviously, and they've been drawn to him perhaps by stances on things like the war in Iraq.
Yes, the war in Iraq, and then that's the question. If it is the fact that he's the only anti-war candidate in the Republican primary, if he ends up being the Libertarian nominee, does that hurt the Democratic Party more than it hurts the Republican Party? If he takes the traditional Libertarian voters and adds to them, it obviously would hurt the Republican Party more, but that's what makes it a bit of a wild card.
Absolutely, he hurts the Republican Party more, because most of the vote that he's going to get in the Republican primaries right now is either going to be the Libertarian wing or the brand-new voters that are just entering the process. He carries those with him. He's going to carry those Libertarians that have always voted Republican before. He carries, say, 5% of the national Republican vote with him and votes the party. They're done.
Yes. Well, I want to welcome either Catherine or Melanie.
It's Melanie.
Hey, Melanie.
How are you, David? I'm sorry, we ran a little late today.
That's okay. Well, I can hear the noise in the background. Give us a live report for the Wild Hog Supper.
Well, first of all, everybody's all Twitter because there's no alcohol here. It's a dry event, so people are just kind of standing around mulling about from one end of the room to the other. But since Catherine and I ran a little late, I've got a couple of people I grabbed to kind of give you a report about what went on tonight. We've got Rasheem Wright, who's the executive. Help me out, Rasheem.
Vice President, Young Democrats
of Georgia. We've also got Misha Butcher, who's the president of the Young Democrats of Atlanta.
Okay.
So, and then we've got Gunnar Hall, and we've also got Jason Cecil, who's president of the Young Democrats of Georgia. So we've got a bunch of Young Democrats here, and they're going to let you know what happened before we got here, which because Catherine and I just walked in the door. So
we'll put the first person on. Kind of introduce who we're having on first.
Okay. All right. This is Rasheem. Rasheem, are you in? Can you? He's called in himself too. Misha and I are going to share a phone.
Okay. Well, if Rasheem calls in, I'll assume that's the next number. But then, while he
okay. Well, in the meantime, I'm going to hand the phone.
I'm going to hand
the phone to Gunnar, and he's going to give you a little quick recap.
Okay. Rasheem and Gunnar can kind of back and forth with us. Well, Rasheem, Gunnar, welcome. Tell us what's going on down there at the Georgia Depot.
Well, this is Gunnar, by the way. The bipartisan cup definitely is runneth over here tonight. Michelle Obama was here earlier, and I definitely freaked out. I think I saw a Huckabee supporter try to jump in line and shake her hand. So if that says anything about the field of Republican candidates, I don't know what that.
Yes, well, sometimes people just like excitement. They're focused.
Exactly.
I believe we have another caller in on with us. Who's this on the 678 line?
That's Catherine.
That's you, Catherine. Okay.
Yeah, that's me.
We'll come back to Catherine. Rasheem, Gunnar, tell us some more.
Well, this is definitely a great event. Networking, you got a lot of legislatures from all over the state of Georgia. You also have a lot of supporters from different presidential candidates. Hillary Clinton, Georgia for Hillary, Georgia for Obama. A lot of different groups here talking, networking, and getting support. You also have a candidate for United States Senate, Vernon Jones, who was here, and Chief Justice Leah Ward Sears was here as well. So it was a great event, a lot of legislators, a lot of young Democrats here, and also Republicans as well.
Yes. Would you say that more of the presidential action was on the Democratic side, Republican side, or split equally?
More on the Democrat side.
More on the Democrat side. I got that impression, so there's more on the, even though the unfortunately, the legislature's more Republican, and, of course, the state house part of it's going to be more Republican, the presidential election was more Democratic, and that says more about the state of the race nationally, I think.
Well, I think it also says that Georgia Republicans are just getting lazy. I mean, the Georgia Democrats are out here working it. You know, we're at the event. I would also like to give... You know, I've never done this before, but I will give my first shout-out. The Young Democrats have definitely showed a presence at this event. I do not see any of the Young Republicans that I know here, so I don't know where they're at. Possibly they're still sleeping, waiting for a session to start tomorrow, but I just wanted to say thanks to all the Young Democrats that showed at this event today.
Yes, maybe they're not fond of barbecue.
That shows a lot about how Young Democrats and how Democrats all over the country are concerned about a lot of the issues, especially in the state of Georgia. So it's very important. You got a lot of everyday citizens who normally would not be involved in presidential politics who are now being involved in presidential politics, which is great. And a lot of them are leaning towards Democrats.
Yes. And also, just talking about the state house side, was there any buzz about any of the upcoming legislation? You know, what was some of the talk about some of the different proposals we heard about or anything new we hadn't heard about?
You know, interesting enough, I didn't hear anything about the Glen tax. That hasn't been a talk of the town. There has been quite a few conversations about, I believe it's HB 90, the Bring Your Gun to Work bill. And there's been some kind of talk. I heard a lot of negatives, not a lot of pros for that. So I think when Wayne LaPierre from the NRA comes down, he's going to be greatly disappointed. But I think that Nisha is here as well to give her side of the story tonight.
Nisha, yes, tell us what you've got.
Hi. I just got on the line, so I'm not sure what the questions are.
We're talking about what went on, just your observations at the Wild Hog Supper, anything you heard. Just give us your view of it.
Well, I also think it has been a great event. As everyone else was saying, there are a lot of legislators here. But what's also really, I think, exciting is that there's a very sort of warm feeling around. No one is sort of cutting eyes at anyone else, and people are just all sort of glad-handing and talking and you know, sharing an evening over pork. No alcohol, but lots and lots of pork. So that's pretty exciting. I mean, Representative Bart was also here, and we got a chance to talk to him. So what's really nice about this event is that all the legislators and other elected officials are just very, very accessible here. And you can just kind of walk up to them and say hello and take a picture and talk about what's on your mind.
Yes, well, I know that is the general kickoff. In years past, it would almost seem like the Wild Hog Supper was almost an extension of the Jefferson Jackson Day dinner, the Richard Russell dinner, but unfortunately I don't think we have quite the control we once had, although maybe this presidential race has brought it back to that. Talking about, you said there was not much talk of the Glen tax. Was there much talk of transportation? And I ask that because in the AJC's poll, if you look at the top five issues, transportation did not register in the top five as far as priorities for the state legislature. And when I drive down to Atlanta every time, that kind of would shock me that it's not a top five issue.
I honestly, this is Gunner again, have heard nothing about transportation. Like I said, the few conversations I've had have been about HB 90, which definitely shocked me. So that the transportation, nothing on the water plan, statewide water plan here today. You know, it's mostly, if I had to say anything, most of the talk of the town at this event tonight was, who are you voting for president?
Yeah, absolutely. There were most people were talking about who they were supporting for president and who they should support for president. There are a lot of, as Rasheem was saying, there are a lot of Obama supporters here with their stickers on. And then there was, you know, also just talk about general nice talk about the food. You know, when's the chicken coming back out? So, again, that was something that was just kind of nice and relaxed as opposed to when we had to start fighting each other tomorrow.
Yes, so hopefully maybe the presidential race, maybe we could postpone the Georgia primary till 40 days of the session have happened and feed them lots of chicken, and there'll be no damage done by the Republicans. Is that what I hear?
Absolutely.
Because I mean, it's very sad. I mean, I'm a person, I expect government to do things for people, but with this bunch running things, I just hope they don't do anything. I mean, I have that little faith in them. I don't think they can do anything good, and maybe I'm just being overly cynical. But
no, I think you're being overly accurate, actually, not overly cynical at all.
Yeah.
I would say that there were Grady protesters out in the front who, for whatever reason, I wasn't quite sure what the basis was, but they were dispersed. But there were a lot of Grady protesters out front before the thing got into full swing, before Ms. Obama arrived.
Yes. I mean, obviously that is an issue on some people's plates, but then if you look statewide, it's not as big an issue as some other concerns will be.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Yes, because I think the 10% that say health care is their number one concern, which I was surprised that number was so low in the poll, you would think that that would be more a broader health care concern, not just for one hospital.
Yeah.
But then I would say one thing Tim and I were kind of discussing is that 10% being so low, maybe people don't see health care as a state legislative issue and they see it more as a federal
issue. Yeah, yeah. A lot of people think that health care is more of a national issue, and especially in the state of Georgia, when Georgia spends the least amount of all 50 states on health care for its citizens. So I think that should, I mean, the Grady issue may turn out to be a larger issue of awareness to health care, I hope.
Yes. Well, Melanie had told us also that Jason Cecil, president of the Young Dems, was there. Is that correct?
Yes.
Sure. I don't know if he's going to call in or grab a phone or whatnot. Maybe Catherine has the phone for him or what have you.
Hold on one second. I'm going to put him on.
Sure.
Hello.
Hi, Jason. David McLaughlin, the Kudzu Vine. I heard you were down there, I guess, leading the Young Dems in force at the Wild Hog Supper.
Yes. We actually had a good, pretty good showing tonight. Interestingly enough, we didn't see a lot of our Democratic state leadership, at least on the House side. The Senate folks were here, but not sure where the House folks were. It's probably just as well, you know, we try not to stab the House Speaker in the neck with a with a fork.
So you mean that the Democratic folks were not there, the Republican folks, or folks on either party in
general? Yeah, the Democratic House leadership was not to be found.
Okay.
You did see some of the Republican House leadership, but the House or the Senate Democratic leadership was here.
Yes.
And Michelle Obama was caused a very great ripple of excitement as she moves through the room, and it seemed people of all stripes, even some of the Huckabee-wearing people, were interested in meeting her.
Yes, we saw the photos on Blog for Democracy, and I do have to ask, Arturo Atlanta, what I see that name posted, but what's the actual God-given name of that gentleman?
Which one?
Arturo Atlanta, and I may not be saying it correctly.
Oh, that's Benson.
It's Benson, okay.
Yes, that is
I know
Benson. Very own Benson.
Yes,
Secretary of the SFARC.
Sometimes the code names for the blogs are hard to decipher.
Yes, they are. I think that particular blog name comes from some kind of sci-fi character name.
Okay. Yeah, I certainly wouldn't have decoded that one then. But, yeah, it just looked like it was a great event out in force. If Atlanta were just a little closer to my home or it wasn't on a Sunday night, that might be better. Now, I did see that the Senate race, there were two of the candidates there of the five. Did that race kind of get drowned out by the presidential race, or was there much buzz to it?
I think it very much is being drowned out by the presidential race at this point. You're not hearing a whole lot of buzz on the at least on the U.S. Senate primary side. We'll probably see more of that closer to qualifying once we have the candidates actually nailed down.
Yes. So I saw that some of the happenings there was on the on the blog's pictures. I will say this: Ms. Martinez was our guest last week, and it seems like she's really getting out there and campaigning in a lot of places, because I saw her yesterday at the Cobb Democrats breakfast as she was one of the two featured speakers they had there, and then she's out at the Wild Hog Supper, which means for someone that's not been involved in Georgia politics, she's picked up on the fact that you have to go places and meet people.
Yeah, I didn't actually see her here tonight, but hopefully she will keep improving as she does her campaigning, because she's, I know at least when she stuck with the Fulton Party that she had some factual errors about how the U.S. Senate actually works, and that's just something that you just can't do that if you're running for the foreign office, to be mistaken about, like, you know, what the supermajority number is and what a veto-proof majority is. But
a lot about the number 62, and it's different.
Yeah. 62, I still don't know what that's about, but, you know, it's better to have choices than to have none, so.
Yes, and just thought, we've talked about the Democratic side. Apparently Mike Huckabee had the most support on the Republican side of any of the Republican contenders.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you're going by, you know, the button V tonight, Mike Huckabee certainly has captured the attention of the folks that were in this room on the Republican side.
So that'll keep the race interesting over there. And one thing I heard, as long as the races on each side stay interesting, that kind of boxes out a third-party candidate from running, which different scenarios have that hurting each party.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
And, you know, and personally, I haven't decided who I'm going to support in the primary yet, but I like the fact that it continues to remain interesting on the Democratic side, and I think the longer that stays the case, the better it is for our party in the November elections.
Certainly.
Because one thing I wouldn't want to see is that, you know, we get settled so soon and then the Republicans fight it out well into summer. Because that would just give them a bunch of free publicity.
Well, if it goes into summer, it'll probably be a brokered convention, but I have a feeling even if it goes to April Fool's Day, that's quite a long time given the way the calendars
are
together now. Well, Jason, Gunner, help me with all the folks, Rasheen.
And Misha.
And yes, thank y'all all for calling in from the Wild Hike Supper and giving us that report.
Well, thank you. We've enjoyed this conversation.
Excellent. Call again.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Well, Tim, it sounds like there's been a lot of lively things going on there at the Depot Wild Hog Supper. I know we
sound like it still is.
Yes, and we hope Melanie and Catherine will call back in later in the show. But right now we have our special guest from Mississippi, John Leake. John, you there with us? John? Well, John's number's pulled up. Maybe he thought we were just... finishing up our Georgia talk, and he'd walk away for a second. John, if you're there with us, come on in. Well, Tim, I've got him unmuted. We'll do some Mississippi talk as soon as John's ready. I'll just keep calling him on. Sometimes we have difficulties, although everything's looking pretty good on the switchboard for John to talk whenever he's ready. Well, he went away. I guess he somehow got his signals crossed. Hopefully he'll try right back. But until he calls back, I wanted to mention something. I got a little political. Well, here's John again. John, you there with us?
Yes, David.
Yes, at first we had you unmuted, but it didn't take, so it took this time, which is what's important.
Yeah.
Yes, well if I'll reintroduce you, Shai, I did at the top of the show. This is John Leake, the head of, or one of the main contributors to the Cottonmouth blog over in Mississippi, the leading blog source for Mississippi politics. I guess, John, you can expound on your involvement there, but tell us about it.
Well, in the spring, we actually were heading into state elections, and I noticed that there wasn't a single state progressive website covering statewide politics. And so me and a friend of mine who now works for MoveOn started the website, actually. He's not affiliated with it anymore because he has to be independent there. But we went to different events and got firsthand reports and just did a pretty good job at getting out good, positive information about our candidates. And I think we helped in a couple of down ballot races. We had a pretty bummer year, but
The odd year elections. We had talked about some of the statewide races that we thought might have gone a different direction. But we were saying that Mississippi may have the most vibrant political schedule going on in the nation right now. When you look at two U.S. Senate races, two open congressional seats, contested speaker's election, all those different things. I guess just go ahead and start off. There's two Senate seats, one which would have been up anyway, Thad Cochran running for re-election, served for multiple terms. Does anybody have any interest in running against Senator Cochran, for starters?
The filing deadline was this weekend, or I think Friday, and two candidates filed, a perennial candidate, and I won't give him the justice of saying his name, and
Eric Foreman. Is he the gentleman that ran for almost every single office in the odd year?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's in that case, but... and the other is Eric Fleming, who was our 2006 nominee.
Yeah.
And he has some baggage. I don't suspect he'll actually do much, but he at least is a respectable candidate.
Yeah. So, and Eric Fleming, I remember, does he serve in the state legislature?
He did. He actually was defeated in the Democratic primary this year, so for his seat.
Okay, so there is a candidate to face Senator Cochran, at least, to the Democratic side. Now
right,
to the
so
more
be a choice.
Yes, now for the more hotly contested race, what really should, I guess, be more of an open seat, but then the governor there, Governor Barber, appointed Congressman Wicker to fill that seat, so he'll be running as a less-than-one-year incumbent against,
right.
If I'm not mistaken, tell us who's running against that.
The two Democrats who are actually, well, Wicker is the Republican, as you said, and he is the incumbent Republican congressman for the most northernmost district in the state.
Yes.
And the other two Democrats are former Governor Musgrove, who was our most recent Democratic governor, and former Congressman Shouse, who was defeated by Pickering, who's left the other seat open back when they did redistricting. Both, I think, in the short election could be very strong. I don't know how well either of them can raise money. I'm more confident in Musgrove to raise money, but he comes with more baggage with a longer history. Both are respectable candidates, I think. They give a good speech, and they've got solid policy and solid ideas, and I would be proud to have either of them as my senator.
Yes. Now, what is the inside baseball thinking to that primary race?
Well, this is actually, I think it's an open race,
okay,
where the top two finishers, like a jungle primary kind of thing, where two finishers go on to be in a runoff. And so the thinking is that one of those two will end up placing second against Wicker if he doesn't reach 50%. And so it really, the two of them aren't running against each other, per se.
Yes. Now, tell me this. Is another Republican running, or is it just Wicker?
No others have made any noise. There's been some efforts to draft a businessman on the coast. There's been some support because this would leave both senators being from the northern part of the state.
Yeah.
But I think that since the governor is behind them, and so is appears to be the Washington establishment, that probably no Republican will get him angry. So he'll probably won't have any trouble.
So both Democrats have to basically get over 50% to hold him under 50. Is that correct?
Yeah, the two of them combined. Yeah.
Yes. Do you think one will try to run more as a independent? Leaning candidate, you know, I'm more of the middle, not so much in the deep Democratic Party, or how do you think that race will play
out? They'd both be more moderate to conservative Democrats. Musgrove,
yes.
When he ran for re-election and lost his first ad, he actually didn't use the word Democrat in his entire ad, but called himself the independent conservative candidate. So I think that's definitely a chance that he might follow the same tack. He actually, in his introductory speech, he spent more time talking about pork spending than anything else, so it really sounds like he's running for Republican votes.
Yeah, so they're kind of running more on their name, just hoping that Democratic voters will say, hey, anything's better than whoever Barber put in.
I don't think Shouse has actually put out his first speech yet, and he's only been in the race 2 weeks maybe a little longer than that, but he... we'll see what he does. I think he'd be the more moderate candidate, more moderate to liberal.
Yes. Now tell me this: as far as the people that line up and support candidates, either being on their staff or other kingmakers, if you will, has anybody kind of signed up with campaigns there in Mississippi for these races?
I don't believe any of the campaigns have actually hired a full staff yet on the Democratic side. I understand that Musgrove, who's the most organized so far, he got an early start, that he doesn't even have a campaign manager yet. I could be wrong, but I seem to remember several people have told me he's still looking.
Yes, and then as far as consultants, I know you have...
He's got a printer out of... it's not out of Washington, but he's already got a printer. So they've already put some of their contracts out.
Sure, sure. Okay, and then that also, when they appointed Roger Wicker, that opened up the first district, which is northern Mississippi, like you said, and also Pickering, and I really don't know where that district is. You'll have to explain it, is also an open seat because he's not going to run for re-election. I guess start off with the first district. What does that race look like?
The first district is, I think, out of all the races in Mississippi that are still up in the air, is the most exciting for Democrats. It's a district that still has a lot of old-time white Democrats who still remember the Democratic Party really fondly. They may be more conservative, but they also distrust Republicans, which is fine with me. But it has a couple areas of Democratic base support. It's got two major cities, major for Mississippi, Tupelo, and cities in DeSoto County, which is Memphis suburbs.
Yes.
And the Memphis suburbs are generally Republican, while Tupelo has generally been more Blue Dog Democrat. And so if the Republican candidate the Republican candidate's running from all over the district. If the Republican candidate is from the Republican area, which looks possible, that might actually help Democrats because they will be able to capitalize on regionalism in addition to party.
Yes.
There are five Democrats running, two of whom I think should be taken seriously. There's Travis Childers, who is a chancery clerk for one of the counties near Tupelo.
Yes.
And he's a popular incumbent. He has name recognition in that section of the district. And he's been a businessman there a while. He's already raised $100,000 in
wow.
a couple weeks. The other candidate that should be taken seriously is Steve Holland, who's in House leadership, Democrats.
Yes.
I think he has more baggage because he's had to place a lot of votes over the years in the House of Representatives. And I think he's said a lot of dumb things, but that doesn't disqualify him. As it looks, I think either of them would have a strong chance in that race.
Yes, I actually was looking on Politics One. That's why I knew Representative Travis Childers' last name, the pronunciation, because there's a Buddy Childers in our area. That's a big, powerful political figure. But then I was looking at Steve Holland's website, hollandforcongress.com, and I must say that it's one of the strangest pictures I've ever seen. It's a picture of him in front of a decent-sized U.S. Capitol with a picture in landscape view of the U.S. Capitol in front of him like he's this large giant overlooking this little model. I don't know if you're familiar with that picture, but it really is one of the strangest pictures I've seen for a candidate's website.
What was the website?
It is stevehollandforcongress.com.
I didn't even know he had a website, actually. So.
Apparently, Ron Gunsberger of Politics One has updated the Mississippi page because he's got all kind of websites linked. Like Governor
all
Musgrove
right.
has his website,
yeah,
MusgroveForSenate.net linked, and some others. So that should be interesting to see that the Democrats have a good side. You told us about the Democratic side of the race. Who are the leading Republicans there out of their, oh, gosh, three to four candidates looking at it?
I think the top two would have to be Glenn McCullough, who is, the mayor of South Haven.
Yes.
Which is the largest city in DeSoto County, which I told you was a big Republican county. And Greg Davis is a former governor of Tupelo, the other side of the district.
Yes.
If it's Glenn McCullough, he comes with money and connections. He'd be able to raise money. But I think that would help Democrats because of the regionalism. Greg Davis would be, I think he's more moderate for a Republican, but he's from Tupelo, so I think that he would probably be a stronger candidate for Republicans. But so far, Glenn McCullough is the only one who has a full campaign organization in place. He's already been holding events throughout part of the district.
Yes. And I guess then moving down to the 3rd district. First, tell us where the 3rd district is.
It's kind of weird. There's only 4 districts in Mississippi, so it's kind of hard to gerrymander them too bad. But this one starts over in the southwestern corner, up on that section of Louisiana. And then it goes across the state and towards Georgia and gets a couple of the cities in there. So it's sort of a stripe across the middle of the state.
So not quite the very south part of the coastal area, but still across...
It's the area between the 4th district, which represents the bottom quarter, really, of the state.
Yes.
And everything in a diagonal from bottom left to top right, leaving out Jackson, which makes it a pretty reliably Republican district.
Yes, which I guess Jackson is Benny Thompson's district, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. He has the Delta and Jackson, which is pretty much a safe Democratic seat.
Yes, so it's 2-2 there. And it looks like the Democrats are not contesting that seat too much. Here they have 2 candidates. Tell us what's going on the Democratic side first.
Okay. Well, Randall Eads he's finished law school, but he hasn't taken the bar exam, and he's one of the candidates. And Joel Gill works with cattle, so neither of them. I mean, both fine professions, but neither of them has, from what I understand, any political experience or really any strong connections to put up much of a fight.
Yes. In fact, I think I was reading some of the issues on Joel Gill's site, and he doesn't really have a bio. That's gillforcongress.org.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't really have a bio, which I thought was interesting, but then his issues, he seems very conservative. It appears he was advocating some type of flat tax, for instance.
Yeah. Well, I think Randy Eads would be the more Democratic. I've emailed him a couple times, and I'll probably help him out a little bit, but I don't suspect he'll get more than 40% of the vote.
Just because it's a tough district. Well, just tell us about the Republican side then quickly as well.
The Republican side is going to be exciting. There are a bunch. It's a Republican district, so all these Republicans see the district and say if they can win it the first time, they'll have a seat for life, unless redistricting changes that. But Charlie Ross ran for lieutenant governor and lost in the Republican primary, but he put up a big fight. He's from a Republican suburb near Jackson, and he's going to be supported by the Club for Growth.
Oh yes.
So he's going to have good financial backing there. John Runceville is a state head of the USDA Rural Development. And so he's got a lot of federal connections, and he worked with the Republican governor, so he's got a lot of those connections. Greg Harper is one of the most populated, reliably Republican county party chair, and so he already knows a lot of he's connected in with their activists, so he'd start with that, even though I don't think he has a good financial base. And David Landrum is the only, he's a wealthy businessman who got wealthy through a company called Primerica.
Yes.
Which looks kind of shady to me, but I can't prove it yet. So, but David Landrum is the only one with television ads up yet. So he's busy building, he started with television ads. What I think will end up happening is he and Ross will be the two leaders, because Ross just ran a statewide race and is going to be supported by the Club for Growth. And he's put like $500,000 into his own campaign already, David
yes.
Landrum.
But will, you know, be a good race to watch, at least on that other side. I did see, I think it was on your blog, you had linked David Landrum's commercial, and it actually was like a pretty well-done spot. I think his website's a little better. It seems like he's got a better-looking campaign, if you will.
Yeah. He got the earliest start, and he's the, I think he jump-started his campaign. I don't think his campaign finance report's out yet, but he had like $500,000, and I'm assuming that he put $500,000 in his own campaign.
Goodness. Well, I was also looking. I noticed that throughout here in these races, you have You have Green Party candidates. You have independent candidates. Unfortunately, you have a white supremacist candidate. Apparently, that seems to be their party. What's going on with all these different third parties running for Congress in Mississippi?
Well, I don't know. We always have a lot of third party candidates in Mississippi. This last year's statewide elections were an exception. For some reason, people just didn't run. We just had one. But in the past, we've always had a large number. I think it's just the nature of people's individualism in Mississippi that they just I can't explain it. But
yeah.
We will have a lot of third party candidates, and I doubt combined they will get 1% of the vote.
Yes, it's just unusual in Georgia here. We do not have a lot of third party candidates because it's almost impossible for them to get on the ballot. Well,
that probably explains it.
Yes,
I think it's pretty easy on here.
Certainly. Well, on the show with us, we have Tim Shiflett, and I didn't even let Tim jump in. Tim, do you have any questions for John?
You know, actually, I had one, and it's about Governor Musgrove. As you know, he's had some personal problems in the past, and I was wondering if those problems were going to be an issue in this year's Senate campaign.
Well, one, he was divorced while he was still in office, and he's remarried, and there were some problems around that, and some of them were actually helped along by the current governor. One of the examples is that he gave a ticket in the front row of one of their debates to his ex-wife, which was pretty low. Yeah, but I think he and his new wife are putting forward a pretty united front, and he, in the past, had been a friend to Roger Wicker, his opponent. And even though they're attacking each other now, I doubt, due to their old friendship, that it would get too personal.
Okay. Thank you, sir. David?
Yes. Well, and also, I guess the final topic we had for right now is there was a speaker's race that just ended, and it was Democrat versus Democrat for the State House speaker's title. Tell us a little about that race.
Well, most Democrats were supporting it. The incumbent, who was thankfully reelected, Billy McCoy. He is a moderate Democrat. He's used the rules of the House, much like they do in the U.S. House, to block some legislation that was really dumb. Like an example would be some of the anti-immigrant legislation that came up in legislatures. We didn't have that much of that in Mississippi, and that was partially due to his doing. And he also did a lot, this is what upset Republicans, he did a lot to irritate the governor by pushing forward a plan to increase taxes on cigarettes while decreasing taxes on food. We have the highest food sales tax in the nation in Mississippi, and the third lowest on cigarettes. So between those two things, it really upset conservatives and Republicans in Mississippi. And as a conservative Democrat, who I think he's more of a snake in the grass, but he's not a Republican. He's taken some Democratic positions. His last name's Smith. And but how it actually played out was the Republicans before re-election, before we had our state elections, the Republicans said, we will vote in block for Smith to get rid of McCoy.
Yeah.
Right. And so McCoy, actually, he and a good friend of the party by the name of Robert Hooks put together the House Speaker's Political Action Committee called Victory Pack. And between that and some very hard-fought campaigns, they were able to replace a number of more conservative or turncoat Democrats with more moderate Democrats in primaries, and then able to win a couple upsets in the general elections to where he actually only won by 62 to 60 votes on Tuesday.
Yes, so very close race. That made a lot of attention, but it sounds like the better Democratic candidate came out of it.
Oh, here's one thing that was a little dirty. One of the things we have, of course, is the pro tem, which is the number two of the speaker. And Smith got a member of the Black Caucus to agree to support him publicly, and he would make him his pro tem choice. And so based on that, they were able to peel off several Black Caucus voters. So what happened there was most of them stuck with McCoy because he's put a lot of Black Caucus members as committee chairman.
Yeah.
But that was one of the last-minute things that really put the race up in the air. Even people on the House floor didn't know how the race would end up until moments before.
Yes, it sounds like it was exciting, and then also the way those coalition votes go, there's a lot of deals made here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, John, is there anything about Mississippi politics we need to know about that we didn't ask about this time?
Well, I wanted to, I don't think any of the Democrats will win here in the presidential election, but I definitely wanted to say that I've talked to a lot of people, and I think, I mean, there will be racism in many places, and it'll stay for a long time, but I think we are past it as, especially, you know, we saw it in we had a couple of Black candidates elected in white majority districts and things this last time. And from talking to people and seeing those results, I think we've gotten past racist politics in Mississippi, and that's a good thing to see.
Yes, and a more competitive year for Democrats, I think Gary Anderson would have won statewide, and
yes,
that certainly would have been a great sign for Mississippi.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yes, and you're going to be our go-to guy when something happens in Mississippi. Expect a call or a email from the Kudzu Vine to let us know about it on Sundays at 6 o'clock Central Time. 7 o'clock here,
excellent,
Eastern Standard Time.
And right now go ahead. Sorry.
And you can download it anytime after the show.
All right. And if any of your listeners want to see what's going on in Mississippi generally as it happens, they can search Google or Yahoo or anybody for Cottonmouth Blog, and it'll be the first thing that pops up.
Certainly so. Well, thank you again, John.
Appreciate your time.
Yes. Well, Tim, it's good to have another southern state getting a little information about that, because obviously Georgia's the main state for us, being based here in Georgia, but we like to have other southern states like we've had with Kentucky and Virginia and now Mississippi. I guess, Tim, before you get to the GOP outrage of the week, I wanted to go ahead and talk about a little political event that relates to RJJ dinner, possibly. That I got in an unexpected place. I went to church this morning at First Baptist of Rome, got my bulletin, and inside my bulletin was a full-color glossy card to go to the New Baptist Covenant celebration in Atlanta on January 30th, 31st, and February 1st, a three-day event. And the speakers for this event include Jimmy Carter, Marion Wright Edelman, Bill Clinton, and Al Gore.
Wow.
Now, there are also
wow.
some other Republicans. Lindsey Graham, Republican Senator from South Carolina, Charles Grassley, Republican Senator from Iowa, are also going to be there. So it's a bipartisan event. But these Democrats are pretty named folks, and we've talked about how on the 30th, if Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, John Edwards, and, of course, before other candidates, don't come in for us to be our speaker, what are we going to do? Well, this event being held in the World Congress Center, the location of the JJ dinner being the exact same time, might just prove to be a wonderful backup plan for the Democratic Party of Georgia, because obviously the four names I mentioned, the two former presidents, former vice president, and the head of the Children's Defense Fund would all be fine JJ keynote speakers.
Absolutely.
So there
especially
may be a,
that magic name, Bill Clinton.
That would probably be the number one choice of the four, although Al Gore and Marion Wright Edelman would obviously be wonderful choices, and of course Jimmy Carter being the elder statesman of Democratic politics in Georgia and the South
be
an excellent
David, let me ask you this. Is this not one year where you could honestly say that the spouses of the candidates would be every bit as big a draw as the candidates themselves?
Well, certainly looking at the pictures from the Wild Hog Supper, we know that a lady that's never held political office is a draw. So obviously, the fine president for 8 years that brought us peace and prosperity and brought the national deficit to nil would obviously be a fine speaker. So, and Elizabeth Edwards, obviously inspiring choice herself, because even though he is definitely third in the race, he has some support in Georgia because, you know, even the big guy Mark Taylor is going door to door for him, I actually read today. So, you know, there's a lot of things going on. Well, Tim, the outrage of the week, I know it's time. Go ahead and give it to us.
All right. Well, 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 the citizens of Georgia were treated to a tour this week. Actually, I should correct what I just said. The citizens of Georgia didn't get treated to anything. All they did was pay for it. Governor Sonny Perdue, Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle, House Speaker Glenn Richardson, and House Majority Leader Jerry Keane did a fly-in to several cities around the state, something they called a unity tour. That's what that was. Heck, I thought it was a bunch of Republicans going around Georgia to get free press coverage in an election year. I also know that the taxpayers paid for those trips. Did I miss something? They went city to city, and they made every promise you could think of that might be of interest to the voters. Of course, though, they did leave out a couple of things. They didn't mention any specifics about any of these promises. And outside of Richardson's promise to pay for trauma centers with a $10 vehicle registration fee, they forgot to tell us how they were going to pay for all of this as well. And they also didn't explain why they haven't yet addressed any of this stuff for the 5 years they've held the reins of power. What we really have here is a political trip in a political year. I wouldn't actually care about that, except for the little fact that my tax dollars and all of your tax dollars helped to pay for this nonsense. They bend the law just enough to serve their purposes, don't they? How many times over the years did they accuse the Democrats of wasting taxpayer money on different things? Remember when they ran against wasting government? What happened to that stance of theirs once they attained power? What happened to their so-called promise to clean up waste? Well, here's what happened to it. It went away just like all of their other empty promises. We have real issues in Georgia like the drought, urban sprawl, education, and transportation. We need public servants who find answers to these problems. Once upon a time, not too long ago, we had these people in our legislature and in our governor's office. Now we have these carnival barkers who fly around the state. The Democrats made Georgia one of the best places on this earth to live. The Republicans are in the process of making it one of the worst. And that's a promise they didn't make, David.
Tim, another good time of telling the truth, but another great show where we got some different viewpoints in from different states. So just join us every week at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time for the Kudzu Vine. And then, Tim, until next Sunday.
All right. Good night.